Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns. Pretty difficult time for all of us right now. You know, we're incarcerated in various degrees in our houses, and I suppose one of the things that we can do, one of the few things that joys that we have left, is to actually dream about what we might do when lockdown ceases and when we can actually get out back into the countryside. So one of the things I think is actually a great pleasure for people who like the outdoors is actually to plan where they're going to go. And so my guest today is a keen walker, and she's a guidebook researcher with Vertebrate Publishing in Sheffield, and has just worked on two big trails books that will let your imagination run wild, I think. So I'll introduce my guest today, who is Cathy Rogers. Hello, Cathy.
Hi, John.
Hi. How's things in sunny Sheffield then?
Well, it's a lovely day to be out in the hills, but unfortunately I'm stuck in the office.
But you're not. Yeah, that is rather one of the downsides of having a job like that, isn't it, really? And so you've just finished editing two books. That's right, isn't it? Two big trails.
Yeah. Big Trails Heart of Europe, which is all about France and Germany and the Netherlands, and Big Trails Great Britain and Ireland.
Right. Okay. And did you? So these are books that list. How many walks are there in the Big Trails Britain and Ireland book?
There are 25 trails in each, and we've tried to go for a real range in terms of length and distribution. So we've got trails in Ireland and Scotland and Wales. Some trails are coastal, some are mountain. Some are very riverside, quite flat, easy trails, and some are real challenges.
Right, okay. And obviously you're a keen walker yourself, so which trails have you done yourself then in Britain?
Well, I mean, my real adventures with the outdoors started 5 years ago. I'd been a weekend walker. I went out into the Peak District a lot. But I never did more than 10 miles. And I got an opportunity with the University of Sheffield, who I worked with at the time, to walk the Pennine Way as part of a team of 20 back in 2015. And that was the first long distance trail I'd done.
Oh, right. And were these were students, I take it, that you were walking with, is that right?
No, it was staff members. The university supported us to all go and walk the Pennine Way in 14 days.
Oh, right.
And when I got this opportunity, we were sent round a list of team members, and on the team was a former British Olympian.
Oh, right.
We had ultra runners, we'd had people who'd done the London Marathon. And I looked at this list and I thought, I'm really out of my depth here. I've never done anything like this. And me and another woman started going out. Every weekend, we went out into the Peak District and walked 20 miles. We went out after work and we walked 8-10 miles out into the Peak District. And we spent 3 or 4 months just really going out and exploring the countryside. And when it came to actually doing the Pennine Way, we were some of the fittest, most ready to do it in the team. And that really opened my eyes to... Yeah, it's within anyone's capability to do these trails.
Yeah, so what appealed to you about the Pennine Way itself? How did you find that? I've done the Pennine Way myself. I'd have also done a section of it not that long ago. I just wondered how you found it.
I mean, the university chose the Pennine Way, and it's partly because we're based in Sheffield.
Right.
We walked it the opposite way to most people. We walked it from Scotland back down to Edale, and then we did an additional day where we walked from Edale to Sheffield.
Okay. So you did it downhill then?
It was about walking home. And I think that's one of the interesting things about some of these big trails. They have a significance. They're pilgrimages or they connect places, or they're trade routes. big trails, you know, have different meanings for different people, and I think it's one of the interesting things about going out and doing them.
Yeah. I think one of the great things that appeals to me about those long trails is that unlike really if you do a day walk, you sort of end up back where you started, obviously. But with a long trail like that, you're always somewhere new. There's somewhere different at the end of the trail every day, and it gives you, I think, a sense of moving through the landscape in a way that you can't really get any other way. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and I mean, the Pennine Way, for me, there's a point where you're going up over Cross Fell and you can look out on one side and you can see the Eden Valley and all this farmland, and you look out on the other side and it's a much more bleak moorland scene, and you get a real sense of the activities that have formed the British landscape. You get a real sense of how that Pennine spine divides the country in places. And it's a scene that in many ways hasn't changed that much in 100 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, one of the walks I think you covered is Hadrian's Wall, which is obviously a pretty historic route. I've walked a short section of that when I did the Pennine Way. And it's quite an atmospheric route, isn't it, really?
Hadrian's Wall, I think, is a great trail. I did it a couple of years ago over an August bank holiday. There's a real sense of history. It's really accessible because at Newcastle and Carlisle, you've got at each end with two mainline train stations on, and you've got the Hadrian's Wall bus that runs pretty much right along the central section of the route. So it's really easy to go up and do a couple of days in Hadrian's Wall and then catch the bus back. And it does a real sense of you're walking in the footsteps of, the Roman soldiers that actually built these fortifications.
Yeah. Certainly when I did it, it was one of those glorious days when it's completely misty and you can't see anything. But it did feel like, you wouldn't have been too surprised if a Roman legion had come marching out the mist, really.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do Hadrian's Wall as one of their first trails, and it is a great trail to do as a first trail. But some of those central sections are quite high and exposed. The weather can be a real challenge, and there's quite a few steep up and down bits. I mean, it looks in elevation profiles, though it's not that bad, but you climb up and down over the wall quite a lot.
Yeah, I remember it's quite rolling in places, isn't it? And it is, as you say, Hadrian's Wall does go through some fairly remote country at times. You wouldn't think so, but it does.
Yeah, I've certainly been up near the Sycamore Gap and felt the wind and the rain and the mist and been very glad to pop down to the pub at Twice Brewed.
Oh yeah, Twice Brewed. I remember that now. That's quite a nice little place, isn't it? There's not much there, if I remember rightly, but there is a pub.
And there's the youth hostel, the Sill, with a great visitor centre and a great cafe there as well.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's not as many youth hostels along the Pennine Way as there used to be, I don't think. So when you So you edited the book. So how did you choose the folk who did the walks? What kind of people did you use?
I actually researched the routes and wrote the route descriptions myself. And certainly, in terms of the British ones, although I haven't done all the trails, there's very few that I haven't done significant portions of. So. I've never walked the Dales Way, but as I was researching where the route went, I was kind of like, well, I've walked through this area near Grassington. I've done this bit in the Lake District. We did that on another walk. And obviously, we're an office full of people who We spend our weekends and our holidays out walking and running.
Right.
But
Okay.
John Barton, for example, is a great resource on the Irish trails. He's done a lot of the Bear Away.
Right. Yeah. And John's the CEO of Vertebrate. I got that right. Okay, that's cool. And what did it, was there any major differences in it, certainly with it, because you're covering Brit, well, Ireland and and obviously Scotland, England and Wales. Are there any particular differences between the way you would approach the walk in, say, Ireland and England, or are they pretty much the same?
Well, I mean, the great thing about England, Scotland, and Wales is we have this right to roam. And we've got a fantastic network of footpaths and rights of way that really open the countryside up. And obviously, we've seen things like England's coast path being developed over the last 5, 6 years. Ireland doesn't have those same rights of way.
Okay.
So you'll find some of the Irish trails rely more heavily on quiet country roads.
Right. Okay.
And stuff like the Bear Away is a great trail right around the Bear Peninsula, right on the southwest tip of Ireland. But all the paths have had to be negotiated with the landowners. So unlike British trails, on the Bear Away, you can't take a dog.
You can't take a dog, really? I
Because
didn't know that.
there are not public rights of way across some of this farmland, and
Ah, okay.
the way has only been granted on the basis that people do not take dogs onto the Irish farmland.
Right,
So
okay.
there are differences, yeah.
Yeah, I one of the things I heard about islands is that well, what we would regard as wild camping is a bit difficult in Ireland. Is that right?
I think it is, but I think particularly on routes like the Bear Away, where there's been a lot of work done with the landowner, you'll find that farmers are quite open to you camping on their
Right.
land if you seek permission.
Right. Okay. So you can backpack it with a tent. It is possible to do that then.
Yes, as I say, there are a few campsites, but I think as long as you seek permission, you'll find
Oh.
it quite easy.
Okay. That sounds quite good. And when you chose the ones, so obviously you also covered Europe in both these books. Sorry, not in both these books, in one of these books. How did you choose the routes in Europe? Because I would imagine it's a bit more difficult, really.
Yeah, well, we've got some keen mountaineers in the company. So there was a lot of focus on things like the Tour Monte Rosa, the Tour de Mont
Right,
Blanc,
right. Right.
we published the guidebook for. But I was very keen on the notion that you don't have to be a super fit mountain expert to go and do these.
Right, right.
So I specifically did a lot of research on looking for trails that you could do if you were visiting a city, for example. So
All right, okay.
there's one that goes around the outskirts of Paris and one that goes around the outskirts of Amsterdam, and looking for ones that you could do all year round. So again, we were really looking for some of the real classic mountain challenges, the really classic long distance European routes, but also routes that possibly people hadn't heard of that were quieter.
Right, right. So there really is quite a range then. I mean, obviously, I didn't even know there was a route round Amsterdam, but there you go.
There was a plan 200 years ago to defend Amsterdam by flooding around the city of Amsterdam.
Oh, right, like a sort of huge moat, basically.
Yeah, you could only reach it by boat, and they built a series of four forts around Amsterdam to control the routes in. And there's a path that links all these forts around the outskirts of Amsterdam. And these forts have been turned into cafes and museums and sometimes just private housing or private buildings. But walk around this iron ring of defence around Amsterdam.
Wow, that's quite interesting. That's amazing. I didn't know that. And presumably, I'm assuming that is fairly flat. Is that right? Because Holland is famously flat, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, one of the advantages is it's very flat. It's well signposted. You can cycle bits of it as well. So you could do it kind of day trips from Amsterdam, spend one day walking part of it, another day hiring bikes and cycling part of it. It finishes on a little island out in the bay called Pampers Island. It was an artificial island that was built for shipping and defence.
Oh, sounds amazing. And what's it called, this route, the Amsterdam route?
This is Stelling van Amsterdam. It's part of a longer waterline pad route.
All right. What sort of distance is it roughly then?
Just double checking that.
That's the guidebook writer, you see.
132 kilometres round.
Oh, right. So it's quite some distance then. It's not just like 27 miles. Oh, right. Okay. I didn't know that.
Outside the city.
Right.
But again, there's a real difference in the distances. I mean, the very shortest walk in both books is the Causeway Coastway in Northern Ireland, which is about 50 kilometres. So right. Most people could do it in a long weekend.
Yeah. Okay. And have you walked in Europe much yourself then?
I've not done any long distance trails in Europe. I mean, one of the ones that I was particularly keen to see go into the book was King Ludwig's Way, because I've visited Munich quite a few times, and it starts out at the Starnberger See, just outside Munich, which is a great destination. And it goes up into the Bavarian hills, just in the foothills of the Alps. So you get great views of the Alps.
Right.
Without having to climb anything too serious.
That sounds really good, yeah.
And I've certainly been to Munich and walked up into the hills. There's a monastery, Andex Monastery, where you can sit and have lunch and a locally brewed beer. So that's a great day trip again from Munich if you want to escape from the city and see some of the countryside.
That sounds really good. I'm particularly interested to hear that there are pubs on these routes as well. this does seem to be a bit of a theme here, but yeah, that's fine. I'm sure some of the European routes there are not pubs. Is that right?
Well, I mean, one of the European routes is the Weinsteig route, which goes through the German wine country.
Oh, right.
So if wine's more your thing, there's that as well. But I mean, one of the things about some of these routes is the food as well. I mean, it's taking you through local areas with great farms or great coastland, great coastal trails, and, you know, fresh seafood, good local cheeses. For me, it's an opportunity, if you're doing a big trail and walking hard each day, to have a really good meal at the end of the day.
Right. So these are very much routes then that you can do, how can I put it? They're not just for the if you like the hardened walker. Then they're also for people who maybe want to take it a bit slowly and to enjoy the sort of local history and the local food and the local beer or wine. Is that what you're trying to aim to do?
I think there's a range of things. So I mean, in the Great Britain and Ireland, we've got the Cape Wrath Trail.
Okay.
I wouldn't recommend doing the Cape Wrath Trail unless you're a well-seasoned expert walker with plenty of equipment who can look after yourself in really remote areas. But we've also got stuff like the Pedder's Way in the Norfolk Coast Path. It's a well signposted, pretty flat route. It meanders along the Norfolk coast between all these lovely seaside towns. You can very easily do it from bed and breakfast to bed and breakfast without carrying much at all. and spend your evenings sitting by the beach, having a nice meal. It doesn't have to be difficult and challenging and blistered feet and sore shoulders.
Yeah, you're certainly selling this to me now. Yes, I'm getting the idea now. It sounds all right. Sounds very good. So, have you finished writing guidebooks now, or for these kind of walks, or do you think you'll be producing more?
We're already working on big trails, Great Britain and Ireland, Volume 2.
Oh right, okay.
Just before we locked down, I went and walked the Teesdale Way.
Okay, what's that like, the Teesdale Way? I've heard of that, but I've never actually done it.
The Teesdale Way starts near Redcar and follows Tees River right the way through to Middleton and Teesdale, and then randomly decides to go up over High Cup Nick.
Right, so it sort of joins the Pennine Way when it feels like it, is that right?
Yeah, it joins the Pennine Way for the last day.
Okay.
Which is quite a shock, because it's a lovely riverbank path. You're never that far from a town or village. It's lots of grassy farmland, lots of wooded tracks down by the river, and then a massive climb on the last day.
Yeah. Sorry, if you don't know High Cup Nick, it's quite a long climb up to High Cup Nick. It's a very spectacular place, though, isn't it? How can you describe it? It's like a huge bowl, I suppose, half of a huge bowl, really, isn't it? Does that with a sort of ring of cliffs around it and really tremendous views? Is that fair enough, do you think?
Yeah, for me, it's a very long boggy trek up Maysbeck. And all of a sudden you get to a point where the landscape just falls away from you.
Yes, that's right.
You look down this spectacular valley and walk round this cliff edge. And for me, the thing about coming up to High Cup Nick from that is you just seem to be in a very boggy moorland landscape, and all of a sudden this tremendous view reveals itself to you.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think the last time, I first did the Pennine Way about 40 years ago, you see, and then this is when the Pennine Way hadn't actually been opened that long, 3 or 4 years maybe, and did it with a friend then, and for some reason beyond my comprehension, we decided to have another go a few years ago. But when they say age is just a number, don't believe. For 40 years, we weren't quite as fit as we were 40 years ago at 19. And we got as far as High Cup Nick, though. And you're right. I can remember all those years ago, you know, we sort of arrived there. And it is, the thing about that place is that you don't expect it. It just appears from nowhere, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
So you've got two more guides. You're already embarked on the next guidebooks then, is that right?
Yeah, and we're investigating long distance cycle trails as well.
Oh right, yeah. I mean, cycling is becoming incredibly popular these days, isn't it?
Well, I think what we've seen this year is a lot of people have rediscovered the British countryside, have dug their bikes out of the cellars and really enjoyed getting out and exploring. And we think it's the right time for big trails, because people have got some experience, enjoyed being outside, and are now thinking, what's the next step? What could I do next year?
Well, that's right. I mean, I think there's an awful lot of people who perhaps are new to the countryside and would, you know, probably went abroad or holiday, you know, that was their main holiday going away. But now they're taking holidays in Britain. And I think a lot of people are discovering the British countryside and just finding out what a fantastic resource we've actually got right under our feet.
Yeah. And for me, the British countryside this year and these long distance trails have been a great escape, because I've done a couple this year. I've done a Dales Highway and the Teesdale Way this year.
Right.
And it's been a difficult year for everyone. And there's something about getting out onto the hills and walking each day, and all you focus on is where you're heading towards, what you need to do to look after yourself, you know, where you're going to eat your next meal, whether your feet are okay. And it's a really absorbing, distracting way of spending time. For me, it's really taken a lot of the focus and stress and worry about what's going on away, because you're really just concentrating on putting one foot in front of the other and enjoying where you are.
What sounds good about your books is that you don't have to be able to walk 27 miles in a day to be able to complete these walks, which is really good for folk to start. So what I'll do is I'll put Big Trails Great Britain and Ireland and Big Trails Heart of Europe. I'll put links to those on the podcast page, and hopefully that'll encourage people to have a look at these books and maybe put a pair of boots on when they can and get out.
Yeah, I mean, November, December is always my time of year when I'm flicking through books. The new Fail Runner yearly calendar always arrives, and we spend evenings sitting around looking at books. Deciding what we're going to do next year.
Well, that sounds a pretty good thing to do. And of course, maybe it's a nice thing to get for Christmas. Who knows? Okay. Kathy Rogers, that's been really interesting. Thanks very much for telling me about your books. And thanks again for coming on the show. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye then. Thank you.